and Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, geology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com on this August the 13th on the West Coast, now August the 14th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Got a great show for you tonight. Before we bring on tonight's guest, just a couple of quick news notes. In case you didn't hear the TNT hour this afternoon at 1 p.m. on BBS Radio, we talked about a shooting that took place at the Democratic Party headquarters in Little Rock, Arkansas. And I had a guest on the show this afternoon, Mr. Chris Hinckley, who hosts another show on Republic Broadcasting Network called the Road Warrior Radio. And Chris is a pretty discerning guy, and we talked about this event. Of course, at the time, the victim, who had been shot by someone wanting to volunteer, was the ruse to get in the office. He was in critical condition for about 4 hours. And shortly after we concluded the show, this gentleman, a Mr. Guatney, passed away. While we were talking about that incident, I was reminded of the Clinton body count, and this is several hundred people who have been associated through the years with Bill and Hillary Clinton, and they've mysteriously passed away, is the term they like to use, by committing suicide or suffering some terrible accident like a plane crash over Yugoslavia or some other parts of the world. And it's a basis for how these people operate. I smelled the rat from the beginning. And wouldn't you know, when they reported the story, they had to interview both Bill and Hillary about this person. Now, I'm not saying outright that I have any information in the regard that they're involved, but it's the count is still going up. And in light of the corruption that's going on around the world, something I reported on at least a year and a half ago, actually it's been a year and 7.5 months to be exact, in the Idaho Observer, I published an article about WantaGate and the theft of trillions of dollars. And this little spat that's going on between Georgia that's probably killed several thousand people and destroyed a city, is a ruse or a smokescreen to divert the attention away from the fact that the money is still being stolen. And right now, Vladimir Putin is demanding his share or his cut of these international payments that went out to the tune of $30 billion, or he's going to ratchet up his interference with what's going on in Iran. Now, our wonderful leaders have decided to put an armada in the Persian Gulf, and I'm told that it's an incredible amount of ships, and we've got ships that are attack submarines and missile launchers and planes, and there's no need for this to go on other than they're trying to hide their criminal acts, and that's it. And I'm going to say it like that. That's exactly what's going on. We've got the scare of a flu pandemic coming out of China, 100 million vaccines. Some of you have heard this. Some listeners may not have heard it. What is the reason for killing 100 million or more people? Because these vaccines will give these people the bird flu, and they've revived the Spanish flu. So I'm just setting the tone to describe the amount of insanity that's going on around the world, and most of it is propagated or promulgated by our leaders, who should know better. But these people are devoid of spirit. And God willing, he will come down here and get rid of them for us. We won't have to do anything. So with that wonderful, heartwarming message to open the show, now I would like to move to more positive issues and bring on tonight's guest. He has been on Evident Footprints a number of times. He's written the book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and he's penned a book that he's actually been offering for free to anyone in the listening audience. It's called Questions and Answers with the Council of Elohim. I've read it, and it rings true. There's nothing in this book that conflicts with anything in any religion. In fact, it makes the world and the universe a much easier place to understand. And we're going to also mention that our guest is a co-host of a show that is on PBS Radio on Sunday nights at 6 p.m. And, correction, I think that's Saturday nights. Saturday at 6 p.m. is called the Don and Wynn Show. And this isn't Don coming on, so it must be Wynn, Mr. Wynn Free. Wynn, how are you this evening?
Hey, Don. How are you? Usually, every other time when you said how are you, I recorrected you, right? I let it slip, huh?
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling fine, thank you.
That's good. And how are the girls, Daphne and Terry?
You know what? I don't think that's a good way to refer to them. If they were listening and I said anything and didn't correct you, they would probably hit me. Okay? But I know you
what,
mean it.
What is offensive in my saying, how are the girls?
Well,
should I call them the guys?
Well, I think to call them girls is, you know, they're women. And I think girls is
okay,
kind of...
Okay, the ladies. How are the ladies?
Well, you know, another thing is, if I actually was reporting on people, I'm, like, violating their privacy. Because they're all which ways. So then I'm just answering politely, you know, on one hand, and saying everybody's fine. Or I give you blow-by-blow accounts, and I'm violating their privacy. And then they'll say, why did you violate our privacy? So... I'm very ornery tonight, but I'm just listening to the way language works, and I'll leave it to say that everyone's fine, but everyone's going through their own things.
Oh, I think we all are, Wynn. We all are.
This is a catalytic point in history, and there's things, you know, there's a multitude of things coming up for everyone on the planet, and people have things surfacing that can be uncomfortable. And I think that the important aspect of life right now is how do you cope with uncomfortable things that come up? And what's the meaning of them? You know, in this country... maybe in other countries, but in this country, there's a tendency of people to blame. I'm not even talking about radicals like yourself. I'm talking about ordinary people. They've been trained to blame something outside of themselves when things are going wrong. And, of course, there are people that are outside of everybody that are doing things to make things go wrong. And probably the bottom line is that they are to blame on some level. And it's good to know what's happening. But on the other hand, when it happens, blaming others doesn't tend to help you cope with the situation. In fact, sometimes it gets you super angry, indignant, pissed off, being a victim. And it's not... How do you cope with a situation on a personal level? Because that's the issue that everyone's going to have to be dealing with. How do you deal on a personal level with things that are falling apart, with things that are, I mean, I hope this doesn't happen. I mean, to me, I've watched the patterns for a long, long time. When I was writing the book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and I started that in the year 2000, it was not so obvious how bad things might get. And the source that was speaking through that book, the channel source, was saying, things are going to fall apart. It'll get to the place where people are trading with each other. You'll have time to prepare yourself. You'll know what's happening. It'll be one tire at a time going flat. So watch things carefully and pay attention. Because being indignant and angry at other people, even when they may have played a part in provoking something, doesn't help you cope with it. In fact, it can help you not cope with it. It can help you feel disempowered and helpless and hopeless. So the world is changing, and I think people are feeling that it is, and they're anticipating things. And they don't know what they're anticipating. What do you think? Am I saying something that you go along with?
Yeah, I agree. I think, and you know this, we've talked off the air as well as on the air about this. I am doing what I'm doing so that I point out to people what is going on. Now, ultimately, this is all illusion. You and I can be very philosophical about it in that respect, yet what is an illusion about being hungry or not being able to pay your bills or being thrown out of your house or being poisoned? Or, you know, we can go down that route, but we've talked about that a number of times. So people have a lot of reason to be unhappy. Maybe they lacked discernment and they put their trust in places they shouldn't have. Maybe they should have been working on themselves as opposed to allowing someone else just to present everything to them, basically to just write out a roadmap for their life and just follow it. And when they strayed off the path, they got thrown in jail or fined money or became sick and had to go through some hardship. I mean, there are a lot of things that go on in life on this planet that we have no explanation for unless we begin to jump off the merry-go-round, so to speak, and take a look at what's going on. So I agree with you in the respect that it doesn't help to blame someone else. I also feel that it doesn't help us to ignore what's going on either. That's very important. So, yeah, I'm in agreement.
Yeah, I mean, as I think I've said this, it's good to know what's going on, because the more people that know what's going on, it puts a little bit of, how would you say it, the provocateurs of what's going on have to think twice before they go further.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they may get in trouble if enough people, if they push things over the line, and they don't want to do that. They want, you know, once it's over the line and everyone's helpless, they feel like they can do anything. But people still have a little empowerment. So, but I think you would ask, what is it that a person could do now? What's the most important thing that someone can do right in this moment, given the state of the world? What are the most important things? And, you know, there was a very interesting, for the people that are tuning in tonight for the first time, I should just say that I have a background of, I've got a lot of backgrounds, but most recently I have a background of having conversations with interdimensional sources, with intelligences in other timelines that have described themselves as group souls that throughout our history may be those energies that have identified themselves as God, or we thought of them as God, throughout history, but they're now giving a more succinct, a more sophisticated explanation of how they operate, and that who we've thought of as God, you know, the religious idea of God is like there's a being, an intelligence that's watching over everything and making decisions and saying, Don, you've been good today, and Wynn, you've been bad. It's people have a hard time, more and more people have a hard time with that explanation. Although you can use that explanation, and if it works for you, and you're sincere and you have high intent, it will work. You'll get results. But the way the universe operates is far more complex. And in fact, I've said this, and I'll say it again because it's a good image, that it's as if your body has billions of cells and you are not individually aware of each cell in your body. But you have groups of cells that manage everything, like your heart and your brain and your circulatory system are all groups of cells. And to my understanding, God works in a very similar manner, i.e., the entire universe is God. Everything in the universe is like a cell that's part of God. So a planet is part of God. We're part of God. And all that is, which is the universe, does not separate itself from being all that is to being something. Because it's already separated, so the something that it already is acts on behalf of all that is and coordinates the operation of the universe with the individual, I won't say cells, I'll say individual souls, which are you and me. So the who's been talking to me identifies themselves as two of the major breakaways from all that is, two major group souls that have been part of running the universe. And so I've learned a lot about how they operate, how they work, and how to make a connection with them, because their overriding principle is free will, honoring free will. So they don't mess with you unless you ask. And so how do you ask? How do you connect? Now, like I said, if somebody is just praying to God and they have a pure intent, I believe these group souls can be part of the answer. And from our level, we can't tell the difference. It looks all the same. It's just something happening that happens, and it looks like a miracle. But, you know, I brought this up, and I forgot why I brought it up and where I was going before I started here. Let me see if I can regroup. We're talking about what someone can do, actually. What's the best thing someone can do to handle what's going on our planet and to cope with it? And there's a couple of things that I think are extremely important. And all I remember, I started to say, because we had a reading for somebody, and in that reading, there was a fellow that was married, had a couple of children, and they told him that his marriage was like very old-fashioned or old-dimensional in the sense that it was, what's the word they used? Tribal. In other words, you know, he was protecting his family. He thought it was his family against the world, and he separated himself from what you could call the Christ consciousness or universal love, because his love was very personally directed. And it was suggested to him in the reading that he open up to the idea of Christed love and to start seeing more people everyone, in fact, is part of his family. If we're all part of God, if we're all cells and all that is, and there's only one energy that runs through the universe, we are all related. And so many people, especially when you're in fear, they go back to a tribal consciousness, and they contract. And it's like doing what we do creates what's going to happen. So it's how do you expand into a universal love consciousness? How do you do that? Because if you're just in your own consciousness, it's so easy to contract and be tribal. And that's one of the challenges, because it's very important to make connections with other people, support systems. Now, the problem is, if you make the connections based on survival and fear, then you're still going back to just an expanded tribe. And it's possible that that's what's going to happen, that things are going to revert to that on our planet. And that's kind of an unfortunate contraction of the highest experience that people can have. But it's what is the reason for making a relationship with someone else? Is the reason to survive? Is the reason because you have to protect your block, because you're afraid invaders are going to come in and steal your car or burn your houses? Now, you know, it's not wrong if there's that, if there's the danger of that happening, it's not wrong to do that. You do have to protect your block. But before you need to protect your block, if you had spiritual connections with the people on your block, let's just suppose you had a block party and you would, you know, just did something out of the goodness of your heart to lift everyone's spirits, you are now starting a weaving of energy at a higher level. And when things start to fall apart, you will have been very glad to have made those connections with those other people on your block. You'll feel much more comfortable with them, and because the original connection was not made out of fear, it was made out of love. And I think that what one of the important things that people can start doing is to look for opportunities now, not wait, but look for opportunities now to make connections out of love and out of no agenda, right? Out of no, what am I supposed to get out of this person? Because a connection that really comes from that place starts to blend energies and starts to keep your heart open. And as we go down this show and I share some of my channel information, people will understand why keeping your heart open is so important in this period. So I'm going to shut up, because what I do is I go on my long rants and then you never say anything. So
I'm allowing you your space.
I appreciate that. But appreciate your input on what I'm saying. Because, you know, these are things that I've looked at myself and figured out. It's not like I'm taking this from channeled information. And I see, you know, okay, one of the things why this is so important, one of the reasons it's so important, and this is where we go into channeled information, where I don't have, like, physical proof, except for all the channelings, both of Wilcock and two women in my life, and cross-referencing. And as you know, as you start to read the stories, which we shared the stories on here in your archives, but there's a tremendous amount of sense. It makes sense. It fits together. So then you go into this area that you can't prove, and basically what they're saying is we're at the end of a cycle. And now we're going to have to include an idea here that some of your listeners may not have experience with, or may not believe, or maybe they're just neutral about it, and that has to do with reincarnation. And I personally am sure that reincarnation is real. I have had too many personal experiences and that have proven to me, without a shadow of a doubt, that when we die, our physical bodies die, that parts of us move on, continue. And normally, we just go into another zone, we're in a spirit form, or in another time zone, or in a matrix, and eventually we find someone that we have some kind of connection with, and that gives us the openness to go in and inhabit a new fetus, which now gets born, and of course, you forget everything once you're here again. And so we go through this pattern for lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And one of the things about reincarnation is that when you're in a physical body, you have the opportunity to change your karma, your destiny, your future lives. But there's very little indication that that's true when you're here. Even though, you know, I'm telling you that to people, but they say, well, how do I know I have future lives? These are reasons to study my material, because within the context of my material, I think there's quite a bit of proof that it works this way. But I'm not going to explain it on your show. I think we've covered it before. So we have future lives. This part of us that's in the matrix takes on another body. And as I understand it, when you're in between lives, you've left pieces of your energy in this realm. And so you know that, and you have to come back and retrieve those pieces of energy by completing your karmic patterns. And when you come back here to do that, once you're here, that is the furthest thing from your mind. And so now you're living your life, and you're trying to have a good time, and you're not even thinking about karmic patterns that are left behind and completing things. It's one of the reasons it's so hard to graduate, and this is what they say, there's a graduation from this realm where you no longer have to come back into this physical realm, this embodiment here. And apparently, this particular realm on this particular planet is one of the most difficult ones in the universe. And it's the reason for that. It's a mix and a match of lots and lots of different planetary populations, and that there are negative beings, intelligences, that have gotten into huge positions of power off-planet and on-planet. You know, a lot of it starts from beings that are off-planet, that are not in bodies, and that they're controlling everything. They channel through people. All channeling is not positive. So one must be very, very careful about what one learns and follows in this realm. And, of course, David Icke is probably the guy that has been the most celebrated about talking about all these negative realms with his books. You know, the truth, he's written probably 15 books about how the negative interacts here. So once you're here, you have no memory of why you came. Many people came to do something good, to do something positive, to help people. And once they're here, they forget. And they get caught up again in whatever kind of trap they've done. And they just go through lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, repeating the same patterns. Now, what my sources are saying is that we are at the end of a cycle, a 75,000-year cycle, and that something is going to happen during this lifetime. Maybe, now, it could last longer than this lifetime, but it seems like it's probably going to be this lifetime. I'm not sure. That is going to be different from our other transitions from one life to the next. And that is, the Earth is raising its frequency, and it's going from third chakra, which is the solar plexus, to fourth chakra, which is the heart. And so there's a new paradigm going to be implementing itself on planet Earth. Whereas in the past, the solar plexus represents power and the heart represents compassion. So the requisite lesson on our planet is jumping from power to compassion. And that sounds really good, except there's one hitch to it. And the hitch is, in order to participate in this upgrade on planet Earth, your own heart has to be open. There's an energy in your heart space that has to be open slightly more than half. Because if it's not, it means you have to repeat this realm. You have to, going back, it's like, going back to grade school when you were about to graduate college with a PhD. And when you repeat this realm, and of course this is stuff I can't prove, this is stuff I've heard it and cross-referenced it from quite a few channeled sources, and I think it's the way it works. So I'm not going to tell anyone to believe it, but when you don't graduate in this cycle end, instead of just doing another lifetime on Earth, you end up getting moved to another planet in another star system to repeat. And you may go back to being a caveman or something low till that planet evolves enough to handle the sophisticated part of your karma. So I'm telling you that story because I was saying the most important thing that people can do is to set up connections that are not based on tribalness, but on universal loving connections. Because if what I'm saying is true, that's what's going to be the ticket for someone to graduate from this realm.
Can I interject something here, Wynn?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, you mentioned this tribal consciousness, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
What goes through my mind, now, it has at least the hint of something backwards or something less than desirable. And I would just put this out there that the American indigenous tribes, for example, although they may have been looked upon by the white man as something inferior because they didn't practice Christianity, they were very spiritual people. In fact, they were doing exactly what you're saying we should be doing. They were worshiping the God. They may have had a different name for who they worshiped, but they were very spiritual people. They raised their families. They fed their families. They had customs. They had a social structure. And what did we do? Those Europeans, I say we, meaning, you know, the pilgrims and the colonists and all the people that came over here to make a life, just trampled all over them. I mean, mm-hmm. we know that from history, and they still show the cowboys and Indians movies to portray them as the bad guy because they would kill us in the process of defending their land, defending their families, defending their lives. I think they were very conscious people. So I'm if you're saying tribal in the sense of uncivilized, I would compare it to what's going on today, and I would say they're much more civilized. Now, there's a dichotomy in what you're describing, in that
I'm really
if I may conclude this statement.
Go ahead.
There's a dichotomy in what you're saying, and I'm bringing it up for the purpose of clarification, okay? I'm not challenging what you're saying. I'm thinking about this, and I'm listening to the message, and my spirit is telling me, well, if I'm moving to a higher consciousness, if I'm remembering, I think that's one ticket to awakening, is to remember and to become conscious of the contract, the soul contract, the mission, what the life is about, and the good that I put out there, the assistance and the love I give to others, if that's the ticket to for me to go somewhere else to be a caveman, that to me doesn't sound like I'm raising my consciousness. Now, if the purpose is for me to go through this duty to uplift other realities, other planets, other societies from scratch, to me it seems like that's where the people just starting out should be. Those souls that are just starting out should be going through that experience. We've been through it, and I don't see the point in going through it again. It's like taking 20 steps forward and 50 or 100 steps backwards. Or
well,
do you get the point I'm making here?
I get the point you're making, and you know, I'm talking in areas that I can't for sure say that's the way it works. You know, when you have a voice explaining this to you, it's channeling, you know, and it's not something you can validate directly, you have to leave a question mark on it. Now, in my particular case, I was writing my book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and the Ra Group, who was speaking through David Wilcock, was explaining this whole scenario that I just described to you, of that actually that they are the group that actually moves souls from one planet to another. So as I'm writing the book, I'm saying, I don't know if this is true, but I have to put it in the book because this is what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand.
The guy is definitely Edgar Cayce. Anyone who studies the story will know he's Edgar Cayce. So now that I'm 2 years into writing the book and I have Daphne start the channel, and I'm getting exactly the same story that's in the book, same, everything, going to another planet, vision of souls, then Terry starts the channel, same story. And then I started, like, looking up other people's channelings, and I find all over the world there are, it's kind of like Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind. What's the right name of the movie? The Third Kind?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember.
Third Kind.
But anyway, yeah, right, where everyone's being told to go to the spaceship and independently. All these people all over the world are getting a similar message about this division of souls, about this graduation, this separation of souls, and not all channelings are coming through with that, but a lot are, totally independently. So, you know, being that I'm talking to Don Nikoloff, the first thing to say, well, one should think, so is there a disinformation crew on the other side that is, you know, giving wrong information to people? That's possible, right? But then you have to think, well, what are they getting out of this? Because this is probably, if you believe this is true, possibly true, now, you may think it's, well, why should you have to go through that evolution again? Well, because you have to go somewhere, and you can't come back here, because your energy field does not fit into this realm anymore. Because your energy, when you are on planet Earth, your energy field is part of planet Earth's energy field. And as long as you're incarnating here, you and Earth are interchanging energy. And so now there's going to be this circumstance where you can't fit into the energy of Earth anymore.
Well, if I can say this, I feel right now that Mother Earth is changing her vibration and it's going higher. Now,
oh, yeah.
What I would like to ask is, what is wrong with us doing the same thing and staying here?
Well, there's nothing wrong with that if we can. The point is that in order to do, okay, if you're in a city and all the systems break down in that city, for example, and suddenly there's no food, there's no gasoline, maybe the electricity's off. Maybe you have to just burn wood to stay warm if it happens to be cold. If you were in a city and you had that kind of scenario, it would be awfully hard to keep your heart open, wouldn't it? I mean, you're sending every day. Everyone is like, how can I say it? Everyone is on each other. Everyone's looking about what they can get from someone else. And you're walking around and you've got to be a little bit paranoid. Whereas in that same period of time, there could be a bunch of people that said, we better leave the city because the shit's coming down, and let's just make a little enclave and bring our tents out into this country, and we'll just grow some food. And suddenly, you have a group of people that certainly don't have deluxe accommodations, but they have a common purpose, and they can hold their heart energies open. So,
I think that can be done anywhere. That all boils down to the individual making that decision. People are going to gravitate to where they feel comfortable, where they can get along with other people. They do that now. And as far as people leaving the planet and going to another place, that's going on every day of the week, 24/7. It's not a new phenomenon. What we're talking about here is maybe something more cataclysmic, more monumental in the fact that these changes are going on all over our solar system and all over our galaxy. And because they're going on all over our solar system and our galaxy and our planet, that they're affecting the rest of the universe the same way. The way I see it here is the Earth has been permitted to be sort of a prison planet for lots of reasons. Many we don't understand, and many, many we do. In fact, we're coming to an understanding of them just because of shows like this and other shows that talk about realizing what is going on. Very few people are even awake enough to see what's going on. And so those of us who speak about these things speak about them with the intention of assisting them in the awakening process. Now, I would love to just talk about spiritual matters and talk about God if I'm going to talk about us becoming better, but we have to look at where we are right now and recognize what has been done to us. You mentioned yourself. We come here and we forget everything. Well, why do we forget these things? Why is it some people at a young age don't forget everything? And somehow they're spared that inconvenience of having to relearn everything. I consider myself one such person. Now, that doesn't mean that from the moment I was born, I just was a fully conscious being straight through my life. I was, to use the word, victimized by the matrix, by the paradigm that was created long before I came here this go around. And I'm observing this in society. I'm observing it in the educational system. I'm observing it in society in general, in the legal system, and in the religious context. And then when you look at the mere aspect of, are we going to survive? Am I going to survive? These people have the intention to wipe 6.5 billion people off the planet because they decided there were too many people here. And that very well may be true, but if they weren't stealing all the money, they could be growing food and feeding all the people and giving people a productive life. But instead, their greed and this darkness has penetrated the very core of the earth. Now, there's a good reason why people forget. Let's not ignore the fact that this is being done to us intentionally from the time we're born as infants. This is how these people treat babies. Okay? So these are people without souls. We're not talking about are their hearts open. They don't have hearts. They don't have souls. They can't and do what they're doing to people, the rest of the people on the planet that do have a heart and do have a soul. And I'm very convinced of that, and all the reading in the world is not going to change that. It's what I do about it, and it's what you do, and it's what each of the listeners and each person they know does about it, taking personal responsibility and saying, okay, we have to change this. Otherwise, what Winfrey is saying tonight is going to come to pass. And I've also learned that I can't interfere with the free will of someone that doesn't want to wake up. I offer, you know, it's like inviting someone into your home and offering them a meal, offering them sustenance, a kind word, love, hope, compassion, inspiration, you're describing what's going to happen here as if the earth is going to change its vibration, but this matrix is still going to be here controlling everything. And I don't see it that way. I think people are going to have a choice. This is my personal conviction, but I'm sure there are a lot of people listening to the show that feel the same way. We are going to have a choice as to what we're going to do. If not, we don't have free will. And for somebody to say, well, this is where you're going, you know, we're bringing down a spaceship and we're taking you to Xanadu. You know, I don't know those people, and I don't know that I want them to take me to Xanadu. I'm going to have to discern that with an open heart.
I don't think that's the way it works. I don't think anyone comes on a spaceship and says, we're taking
you off. I'm speaking kind of metaphorically. You know, we had this group a number of years ago that I can't remember, Heaven's Gate. They were computer programmers, and their guru got them all to drink some Kool-Aid and kill themselves. It was probably a psyops, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, the story we were given is this guy convinced all these people to kill themselves, that they were going to be picked up by a spaceship. I mean, it sounds like something the CIA would make up, okay? And I know enough about what... What the CIA does, yeah. I know enough about what the CIA does to see that that's a psyops thing to affect the whole of humanity, because that story was nonstop in the news, okay? Mm-hmm. Nonstop, but they didn't talk about when they went in to murder a church full of people in Waco, or when they blew up men, women, and children in the Murrah building, or the thousands of people that were murdered on 9/11. You see, these things... They have meaning in some people's lives because they lost a father or a mother or a son or a daughter. These are issues that a lot of people are struggling with. And I'm convinced that we have a responsibility to fix these things down here. I'm not here going through what I'm going through just to get a ticket to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
If you understand my meaning now.
Well, mostly we're talking about future lifetimes now. I mean, we are going to die, and we are going to get out of here, and for most of us, that's quite a mystery about what happens then, at that point. And
we can speculate.
So, in my case, I have these unusual conversations, and they seem to be indicating this is how evolution works at a cosmic level. In fact, the Ra group, who was speaking through Carla Ruckert, and she's like one of the most respected channels in the world, the Ra group explained in great detail that Earth itself was a destination point for cycle repeaters from other planetary systems. And that's one of the reasons it's been such a problem down here, because they did something unusual. Now, you see, at this level, apparently there's a lot that's done to you and that there's executive decisions being made. Now, people are going to have to decide themselves if this is real or not, but I have a predisposition, you know, to believe it is, that many planetary populations go through this cycle change, this end of a cycle, where there's the division of the population, where the people had gone through lifetime after lifetime consecutively on that planet, and then the planet itself upgrades. It raises its vibration, and at which point there's a division that takes place, because this happens like automatically, because if your energy field does not match, if your personal energy field does not match the planetary energy field, it doesn't fit anymore. So now that personal energy field has to go somewhere. Now, you know, this is where I'm just saying, here's what they say. When it goes somewhere, this movement is all under the auspices of these major group souls, and that that Earth was a destination point for planetary populations that went through their division of souls. And the ones that did not graduate on a number of different planets were all moved to Earth to continue their evolution here. And, for example, even in our own solar system, there were two planets, Mars and Maldek. Are you familiar with those, Don?
Yes.
Well, Mars and Maldek, both that have planetary populations, and those planetary populations destroyed themselves. And Maldek became exploded and ended up being the asteroids. And Mars had, I don't remember the whole story, but Mars had some kind of warlike activity. But it didn't destroy its physical planet, but it destroyed all life. So in both of those cases, there were like billions of souls that were fragmented and blown away that were floating around somewhere in the middle of no man's land. And that those souls were grouped together, and these group souls that I'm talking about can do this, apparently. They say they can. They were moved to Earth to continue their evolution, because otherwise they couldn't continue it on the planet that they were attached to. And so this is the way evolution works at a cosmic level, and that there's planetary populations all over the place. And when the planet itself gets to a certain energy level where the souls have to either match that energy level or repeat, then this is the way administration works at the highest level of our universe. And so Earth is made up of numerous planetary populations. Different races, in general, are different planetary populations that came from another star system. And in most cases, they were the group that didn't graduate. And this is oversimplification, but that's, in most cases, it's a way to think about it. And the problem has been on this planet that it was an experiment to put so many planetary populations together on one planet. Normally, if you're on a planet and you're going through this division of souls, then those souls that don't graduate all go together to their own planet, and whatever they're going to repeat, they repeat it as a group. What was different was that in our planet, there were many, many groups. And because there were so many groups, it left a lot of openness for the negative to infiltrate and screw things up, because then it became easy for people to think we're superior and you're inferior. And of course, in religion, this has been a consistent theme for many religions, where instead of bringing people to oneness and to recognizing the law of one, they bring people into thinking they're the superior religion and others are inferior. And so again, we have tribal consciousness at a slightly larger level. But you're still
in terms of our education, I think what our education really is the law of dumbing downness. You know, it's we're intentionally dumbed down by those that control the planet so that they can manipulate us to suit their own purposes, to make slaves out of us.
Well, you know, I don't know if you've ever read this, but I'm probably not going to quote this correctly, but at some point, the normal human was genetically engineered in order to keep 10 of its gene things inactive.
The strands of DNA, the spiral
strands. Yeah. So there's two strands that are active and 10 that are inactive, which causes humans to not, you know, to not have the psychic powers that they could. And there was the fear that if humans could open up their DNA, that they would become very powerful. And it was engineered so that they would have a difficult time doing that. Now, the way you open your DNA is to open your energies up to these flows that are coming from the Hunabku, from the center of our galaxy, and the very things we're talking about, which I'm saying is loving each other opens up energy flows. Opening up energy flows starts to reprogram your DNA so that you learn to automatically hold a higher energy of the matrix. And,
well, what you've alluded to, and this is for sake of you know, discussion here, you know, they describe that all of these souls being brought here because of cyclical patterns, where, you know, it's like a dog chasing its tail, running around in a circle. It's never going to catch the tail, and it's going to keep trying. It's going to try different methods to catch it, but it's going to keep turning around and never quite reach it. Although some of us have seen a dog do that, they figure a way to do it. But I'm speaking metaphorically here. Yet the system itself here divides the people intentionally. Everything is dichotomized for the purpose of retarding our consciousness, our conscious development.
Yeah, and you know that it would be harder for the system to do that. Like if this planet was just like one of the irregular, let's just say the planetary population of one planet was all brought here, it's harder to divide people against each other because they all look the same. There's not the room for prejudice. They have the same cultural habits. But unfortunately, that's not the way it works. So it's easy to divide us. It's easy to separate us. Like in religions, oftentimes they're channeling in the center of religions, and they're channeling negative sources that will tell people, you are the chosen people. And as soon as that happens, they're no longer following what we call the law of one, recognizing that all is part of one energy, and they're being divisive. This is, you know, how the negative works and operates.
Yeah, I understand that. Now, in terms of the Earth is raising her frequency to a higher state of consciousness, and so there are those that aren't going to be able to remain here just because they won't have the energy makeup to be compatible with what's going on here. What role is the Earth going to play? And what role are the people who are elevated in consciousness going to play? Are they going to have to start from scratch again? Or is it the ones that have been the evil ones down here? Are they the ones that are going to start from scratch?
Well, I don't think the dark ones are going to be part of the evolved Earth because they don't have their hearts open. And if having your heart open is a requisite to being here, then if you don't have your heart open, you don't fit. Now, you know, when I say having your heart open, when I say that, some people think, well, you're being a nice guy or having your heart on your sleeve. And that's not what I mean when I say having your heart open. It's an energy. Have you ever been around somebody that radiates a certain energy, and just being around them, you start to feel uplifted?
Oh,
that's
sure.
That's having your heart open, okay? And,
yes.
You know, there's a lot of possibilities in the way things that can happen, including ascension. I mean, in the book Questions and Answers with the Elohim, there was a whole section of where they were saying that there's what they call probability vortices at any given moment of what might happen. And that's based on the collective consciousness of our planet. And I mean, one of the possibility, I won't say probability, one of the possibility vortices is all life gets wiped out here. And, I mean, that's not hard to not consider. It seems like it's certainly within the realm of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Another possibility, Vortis, is that somehow things will hold together and there'll be people here for another 100 years. And the indications are, though, that it's going to go, you know, the sophistication of the world is going to go down, and that we'll end up trading with our neighbors. That, you know, we have to find ways of being of value to our neighbors and trade with them, because that's what's going to be the way to survive, because the systems are going to break down.
And well, I see an advantage in that, actually, Wynn, because the way the system is designed right now is just to make the corporations rich and to allow the government to steal the money and to block or to seal off the universal conduits for abundance. And
well,
Well, I was just going to say there's also an advantage, even though, you know, we look at technology as something that we can't get by without. I would suggest that being in that state would permit us to look at the higher vibrations, you know, to operate from within the heart. That's the whole reason for this show, is to point out what's...
You're absolutely right. And the thing about it is if it depends on the attitude of the people and their predisposition, if and when this is a scenario that's going to happen, this is where you have to start, why I said you have to start preparing yourself now psychologically and see it as a good thing, because the fact of the matter is it allows you to open your heart to other people to be in this circumstance. But there's no guarantee that's going to be the way it is. That's just one of the possibility vortices, that people will react in that way. And I'll tell you, the more loving energy that we can shower down on our planet right now, the more we as individuals can be a bridge between the higher vibrations and the earth plane. And the more that we can be that bridge, the more we change other people, the more we become part of the evolutionary process, and not in our mind decisions, but actually through our being, and we increase the possibilities of a more positive outcome. And this is one of the most amazing things for me to have cognized in the last few years, how our vibration changes everything around us and changes the possibilities that could happen. Because, you see, you're thinking of doing it in kind of a political way or an anti-political way. And to me, this is even more powerful because there's no polarity in it. You're not against anything. You're just for life. You're for higher vibration. But you have to grow into that. You have to, it's not something that most people do automatically. They have to think it's possible, and then they have to look at how to do that. But one thing that always works that anyone can do is random acts of kindness. This is what builds the vibration. When you do things that have no agenda other than kindness and care for another being, you are changing your vibration and their vibration, and probably a lot of other people's vibrations that are in between.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm a proponent of right now, for people to watch for those opportunities.
Let me share a short little vignette that occurred a couple of days ago. I was getting some gasoline in my vehicle and having a little chit-chat with the cashiers, and we were just talking about the weather and things in general. Nothing, you know, small talk, but very pleasant. You know, they light up when I come in there, and we just have a rapport. They recognize me, and I'm not like many of the other customers that they see, because they get a lot of people passing through, if you know what I mean. They're not the locals. So I'm a local, so they know me, and I've helped them in the winter time shoveling the sidewalk when they couldn't open the door to the place. And, you know, there's a blizzard going on outside. I grabbed the shovel and shoveled it, and you know, little things like that. Well, I'm in there, and we're having this chit-chat, and a lady comes in, pretty frantic. She had been vacationing, and their boat capsized, and she lost her wallet in the process. It was, I guess she lost, you know, all of her papers, her credit cards, and she had quite a bit of money in it, she said. I asked her where the boat capsized so I could go see if I could salvage it. No, I'm just kidding. But she's in a dire state because her gas gauge is on empty. There she is at a gas station, and she has no money. Now, she began pleading her case to one of the employees there, and I could tell they didn't know how to deal with this situation. You know, she gave her name. She was willing to give her address and phone number, and she couldn't substantiate who she was. What do you do, and what does one do in a situation like this? And I'm listening to this lady, and I thought, this is crazy. I just opened up my wallet, and I gave her the money that I had in my wallet. And I said, here you go. You can make it home. Now, she was concerned that she would still have enough money to buy enough gas to make it home. And I assured her that she could. And the jaws of the employees just dropped when I did that. They didn't expect to see that. And to me, it was as if anyone else, any of my friends asked me, you know, can you loan me some money? I'm in a pickle. I'm in a bad situation. Can you help me out? I'm the kind of person, if I have it, it's theirs. And I know many people that are the same way, that are just as kind. So that was my opportunity to do, perform an act of kindness. And I got gratitude from this lady, and I said, you know, you don't need to thank me. It's not a loan. It's a gift. Don't worry about paying it back. You don't have to give me your information. I'm not going to hunt you down to get this money back. Now, it's not even a question of how much money it is, but I thought to myself, any of these other people could have done that, but for whatever reason, they didn't do it. They didn't feel it. Now, did I even give it a second consideration afterwards? I'd forgotten about it until now, till we were talking about this. It just seemed like the thing to do. It was the most natural thing to do, and I helped someone solve a problem. I was in a position to help them solve a problem. I could have thought, well, I'm giving half of this money to the government. I could generate those thoughts, but my concern was to help that person in this time of extreme stress, to at least know that they could get home. And I the only reason I mention that is because that's the kind of thing you're talking about. Now, it could be feeding someone, or it could be helping an elderly person walk across a street, or carrying a heavy package for someone, opening a door. I don't see these things anymore. People seem to be just compartmentalized so much that they're just wound up in themselves. So I agree with you that those things are important. Now, maybe the impact will be that someday this lady will do something kind for someone else in need. Maybe the act of kindness that I bestowed upon her will move on to another. I sincerely trust that that's what will happen. But I don't expect it to come back to me that way. If it does, fine. I'll accept it. But if you understand my point there, that's...
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I wasn't sure if I muted myself. You know, I've had a number of experiences like that in my life where I've done something And most of the time, you never know the results of what you did. But occasionally you do, and they're so touching when you did something totally without any agenda, and you find you changed somebody's life. You know, your description of what I was saying, or your expansion of it, is exactly what I meant. And that is that no matter... Everyone is under the pressure of making money now. There's not enough money, and everyone's in a little, I won't say everyone, but most people are in a little bit of anxiety. And when they do that, they don't feel like they can take the time to do things like random acts of kindness. You know, it's like, somebody could go, for example, and be like, writing letters for people at an old age home. And suddenly, because they're so kind and doing something ungenuine, and when you do something like that, you get the vibration back from those people of such gratitude that the person looks good, and suddenly he marries the nurse at that old age home because he's looking so good. It's like things come to you when you lift your vibration, and you're not looking for the thing, and you're off-center, but you attract something. It's even better than you could have attracted if you went directly for it. And that's a very important principle of the universe. I was going to tell the story that there's a period of time when I used to sell things at swap meets. And I had this idea of saving the homeless. So I would take all the homeless people down to have them help me sell. Not all of them, one at a time here and there, you know. And there was a guy that I took one time, and he was just so difficult. I said, I'm never going to use that guy again. He's obnoxious with customers and whatever. And so about 6 months later, I had occasion to be on the bus. And my car had broken down, and I was taking the bus to the car mechanic.
And he was the driver.
No, he wasn't the driver. He was
no, I'm just
on the
kidding.
Bus.
You're not coming on my bus. Go ahead.
No, he was sitting on the bus, and he saw me, and he got all excited. His name was Paul. And he said, hey, man, I just want to thank you, man. I mean, that was so far out. And he had this little box text to him. He said, you know, that day I spent with you, I learned that I could sell things. So I went downtown, and I bought a bunch of watches, and I go store to store, and I'm making a living selling watches store to store. And he showed me his little box, and I said, my God, here, even I helped the guy, and I was grumbly, and he didn't do a good job. His life still totally changed as a result of that little thing I did. It blew my mind. So this has the potential to happen to us all the time. And these are the kinds of things that help you keep your heart open and get out of your own drama and your own fear and your own tribe and lift to something a little bit beyond that. And you do this enough of the time and suddenly your life has a different momentum to it. You attract new things to yourself. Because your vibration is at a higher frequency. So.
Sure.
In any case, this is a very conservative show, Don, I think. The only thing we've talked about that was far out was, how when you die, your soul gets moved to another planet if you don't graduate this realm.
You think that's conservative?
No, I said that was the only thing that, was kind of far out. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, As I came to understand this, I started to see that, you know, there's a lot of things that I say that come through my channelings that have a lot of connection with Jesus. And the idea that one will be taken, one will be left behind, the meek will inherit the earth, what I'm describing is kind of an esoteric understanding of all of that. And I was seeing that this other planet where people are taken to that don't graduate, when I say people, I shouldn't say it that way. I should say, because it sounds like you're getting into an airplane or a flying saucer and going somewhere. No. You go, the way that it works, I mean, the way they describe this. Now, keep in mind, I'll share this, I'm not saying it's true, but this is, you read my book, it sounds like they are who they say they are, which is the Elohim. And the way they describe it is, it was like rolling up the matrix of all these souls like a bunch of paper dolls, and then they unfold it into the field of another planet, and now those energies are going to matriculate into the evolutionary track of that planet. And they have to come in at the level the planet's in. In other words, I mean, you can't assume that you're going to go to a planet that's got computers and high technology. I mean, it could be a caveman, it could be, you know, over the... I don't understand how this works, and they don't give me any more information than that. But nonetheless, it came through Daphne, it came through David Wilcock, it came through Terry. And when I did cross-referencing on it, I found that bit of information coming up all over the place. So, in a sense, I think that that other planet would correspond perhaps to hell in terms of Christian terminology, because if you took our planet and you took the people with open hearts off this planet, what would this planet be like? I mean, it's pretty bad as it is. What would it be
well,
like?
Well, yeah, it seems pretty much like it is hell now. So.
But there's still a lot of people with open hearts on this planet. You being one of them. So you take all those people out of here, and then you move, people to another planet to get into a karmic path. And when I started to feel bad about this, they said, "Listen, this is just the way it works. Time doesn't exist anyway. So what if somebody spends 100,000 years?" Catching up on their evolution, relearning their lessons. They don't know, because it's just like us here. We don't know that we're incarnating. We're going back and forth from this realm to the other realm, this realm to the other realm. So, you know, from their point of view, there's no time. They exist outside of time, and they just kind of look at all this and say, ho-hum, just another bunch of souls on an assembly line going through. And going through the experiences so they can graduate. Now, you know, people may not like to think of it, it works this way. And whether you like it or not, it just might. And so it's just something, the only reason this information is incredibly important is that just in case it's correct, it's a reason to make sure you keep your heart open over the next years, that you reasons to open your heart. Now, if it's not correct, well, what the hell? You had your heart open, and you probably generated a better life and made people more happier than you would have otherwise. But for some people, this is like a little bit of motivation that pushes them over the edge. You know, this is, geez, I better be loving, because they might save themselves a couple hundred thousand years of incarnations in a pretty dark place.
What you're describing when really makes sense, I'd have to say, you know, just putting myself out there, I can't speak for those that aren't able to stand before a microphone and speak over the airwaves. And I'm sure there are many listeners that can look back, they can reflect back on their childhood. And we've all been through experiences. And I can tell just by looking at my life that my heart was always open. My heart's always been open. And so this is not a new concept for me to grasp in that sense. Now, can it open more? Yes. But I've also learned to what I can open my heart, or what I'm willing to open my heart to. Because there are some things that are presented in a fashion where we can misconstrue the source or the intent behind the invitation to allow that presence to come into the heart, and it's not always healthy. One must also use discernment, and it's a fragment of that process is operating on a mental plane, but the majority of it is still within the heart. I mean, this is not something new to me, and yet as I work with others, bringing them to that point, as you are, and I'm sure you would agree, that you feel your own heart opening, or you feel your vibration going higher.
And this is the law of one in action. You know, you're not opening your heart up. You can't open up your heart. You can't open up your heart to someone else without opening up your heart to yourself.
Yes.
You need other people to be open with. You need a little community of people. You know, that's one of the things that I've been doing on my conference calls, because I realized when I was talking about all of this to people, and I would go up and give talks about my book and give workshops, and, you know, when I do this, an incredible amount of energy comes in, and an incredible amount of loving energy comes in. But people go home, and they go back to their old patterns. And if they, you know, the stuff that I talk about is so hard for people, even when they sit and listen to it, and they go home and they try to talk about it to their friends, and they say, get out of here, what do you mean? It sounds so bizarre. So I started doing these conference calls, and I asked the group souls, would you work with me on the conference calls? Would you work with the people on it? And they said they would. And, you know, it was like a big experiment, because I didn't know what would happen. So we would do the calls, and it was just a few people at first. And the people that started to get the energy just kept coming back. And they started meeting other people on the calls and becoming friends with them. These are people that are all over the country that never even saw each other. And so we've been doing these calls for a couple of years, and just those calls themselves have been a phenomenal catalyst to help people keep their hearts open, because there's a group of people that all have the same intent. And when you start keeping your heart open with a group of people, you know what happens? It starts to get in the habit of being open, and everyone feels your energy. Whether you made it, you don't have to make any effort, you're just walking around, and you're radiant. You're radiant in your space. And that would be a good vision for people to have. How do I get my heart so open? And it's not just your heart, your other chakras, but particularly your heart, so that when I walk into a room, I change the quantum field of the room so that I cheer everybody up, or my space cheers people up. That's very possible. And I know that I do that. I know I do it. And I suspect that you do it, Don, that you don't even have to engage with people. You don't even have to talk to them. You're just, your vibrations in a room are changing the quantum field in that room so that there's an automatic upliftment of the energy of everyone there.
Sure. I do that with music, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, if nothing else, as I do what I do, whether I'm writing or I'm functioning as a talk show host or playing music or helping someone accomplish something, you know, working on a team, my intent is to give the best of what I have to offer. It's always been that, and I'm at a point in my life where I'm not tolerant of the things that I know can be changed. Okay, and I'm not asking change you can believe in. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about real change in an upward, in a vertical fashion, mm-hmm. in terms of raising the vibration of everything that I come across. Mm-hmm. And there are so many different ways to look at that process. It means something different to everybody on the planet because everybody's at a different level. I mean, there are no two people that have exactly the same consciousness within themselves unless they get to a place where they have become absorbed by the oneness totally.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's no more individuality at that point. They become a part of that process. Now, they may have some memory of it or some recollection of it on some level, but they will continue to operate in the manner that you're speaking of and I'm describing. Yes, these are important things to do. Very, very important. And it doesn't mean that we have to be doing something special outside of who we are and what we do. I mean, if you're an auto mechanic and a customer comes to you and your car is broken their car is, is not working properly, let's say. It needs a tune-up or it needs this or that. It needs some part. What is wrong with fixing the problem and stopping there? But we're in this society where greed takes over and people create karma for themselves, negative karma, because they make a choice that eventually they're going to consider is the wrong choice. At the moment, they made the right choice because they're going to learn a karmic lesson. But it's for purposes of progressing, it's like you said, opening your heart and a random act of kindness. Why does it have to be random? Why can't it be a usual act of, a regular act of kindness?
Well, I think that the idea of the random act of kindness is that it's spontaneous. For example, when people know each other and they do something nice for each other, oftentimes it's not pure. It's like it's to generate a favor or a debt. If I give this to you, maybe you'll do this for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you have to do it with that kind of energy on it. But oftentimes, if you do something for someone you know, you can't help but create that unless you've got a very pure consciousness. So the idea of a random act of kindness is that it's pure. If you walk down the street and you have $100 and you give it to a bum because you can feel his need for it, or you give it to somebody that really needs it, you're never going to see them again. There's no obligation. There's nothing that was done except in that moment. That's a random act of kindness, okay? And so you can't, coming from your heart means there has to be no manipulation and no agenda. So, like, humans tend to screw this up really easily because, let's say, for example, I said, okay, if your heart's not open, you're not going to graduate this realm, and you're going to end up repeating. So now a guy is walking around saying, I better keep my heart open. What am I going to do to keep my heart open? Oh, my God, my heart's closed. I'm not going to graduate. So he's doing things for the wrong reason. He's not doing it for the love of the moment. And that's why the idea of a random act of kindness is an image, is appealing. But of course you can be kind to everyone. You're probably one of those guys that is a great neighbor. I mean, people are lucky to live next door to you. And that you've got it down to an art. So it's not like you have to worry about it. But other people who are, I'm sure there's people listening to the show tonight that maybe are in a little bit of fear, are a little sick, fighting with their husband, or their wife.
Yeah, they could be very angry and very emotional about what they consider, a threatening type of experience. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So it's hard for them to, they have to really work hard to create a random act of kindness. Now, sometimes, like, a random act of kindness can be, like, you have an aunt that's old that you haven't talked to for months. And it's, I'm going to call up Aunt Hattie. I have an Aunt Hattie, and I do this sometimes. So I'm going to call up Aunt Hattie today and see how she's doing. And, you know, she's always so happy to hear from me. And everyone has people in their lives that they could do this with. And every time they do this, it seems like a small, inconsequential thing, but it isn't. Because every person is a path back to God. And you can't lift someone else without lifting yourself.
Well, yeah. I think...
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know... there's a biblical saying that you can give a man a fish and you feed him for a day, and you can teach him to fish and you feed him for life. And I think it's about empowering, part of this is about empowering people. Giving something that you consider is a special skill that you have, if it empowers someone, what is wrong with that? We're so, We have this concept of competition inbred in us, that somehow if I share some secret with someone that might make them more successful, that it's going to make me less successful. In other words, we don't recognize the impact of doing an act of kindness has on someone else, and we limit. I think we limit, it's conditional. Is what I'm getting at. If it's not to immediate benefit, we tend to not even consider that as a possibility. And I think in light of that story that I shared with you about, you know, giving this lady some money so she could buy gas and get home. I mean, what is wrong with that? Why, you know, it's actually demonstrating that I know that abundance flows through me. Am I a millionaire? Am I rich? No, that's not the point. Abundance isn't just how much money you have in your pocket or in your bank account, or it's not whether you have aluminum siding or vinyl siding on your house, or if it's a stone house, or you know, a shake roof. There are drawbacks to everything. Everything's got a negative side to it. Shake roof might be very expensive, and it might keep the house cool, but it helps a fire burn too. You know, so there are moments when what we think is the best that we can have, you know, all we're doing there is expressing our ego. We're expressing our separation from everybody else. Mm-hmm. And I think we shouldn't even really be thinking of, you know, I'd like to do something kind for this person. For the purpose of doing something kind, if you know what I mean, I think if you're not acting naturally, there's something about it that's contrived.
Well, you know what? It's good to do something and then be honest with yourself. Say, okay, I tried to do a random act of kindness, but I had all these agendas, and then I'll try it again. Because you're doing this to get into a habit of keeping your energy uplifted.
Yes.
And if you do that, you automatically attract more things into your life.
Mm-hmm.
So, if there's an agenda, you don't keep it doesn't uplift you. It becomes an obligation. It becomes even, you know, I want to get this out of it. I want to change my karma. And all those reasons for doing things have the opposite effect of doing them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, you know, everybody's had this experience too. You may be walking down the street and it could be a homeless person. It could be just a bum that just snuck out of the house for a few hours and he's going to try to round up some change to buy a bottle of wine or whiskey or, maybe some drugs. Today, drugs is the thing. And this person will approach every single person walking down the street and they will do it in sort of a repulsive manner. Or it's our let's say our prejudices, in other words, that make us think that this person is going to be unpleasant. I mean, this is a human being we're talking about. Yes, he may need a bath. Yes, he may need a shave. Yes, he may need clean clothes. But have we walked in that person's shoes? Now, I've seen people literally push these individuals away when they're asking for, it used to be, can I have 50 cents for a cup of coffee? Well, everybody knows you can't get coffee anywhere in the country for less than $1.40, and that's without tax. So it's like, can I have a couple of bucks for coffee? Now, if you're going to give that person something and you're going to honor their free will, I think if you feel moved to enrich them at least for a moment, to lay some coin in their hand, we shouldn't be so quick to say something like, well, I'll give you this if you'll buy yourself a meal or buy yourself a cup of coffee, but if you're going to buy whiskey, I'm not going to do it. Now, you've just put restrictions on the free will. You've just put restrictions on the giving. In other words, it becomes totally conditional now on what you expect that person's response to be. You could say, well, I could give you a couple of bucks for a cup of coffee, but you look like you could use a meal. Let me buy you breakfast and coffee at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what have I done? I've caused him to move out of that space that he's been in, where he's begging. Now he's invited as a guest. I've given him some dignity. I've opened up the opportunity to talk to him and learn about what his problem is. Maybe there's something that further that I can do to help him. You know, he might have a talent or a skill that, for whatever reason, is not being used because of some experience he had. So it's, that's how I handle those situations. Now, am I always sitting around eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner with bums? No. But when I have an opportunity to help someone, and I have friends that do that too. I've got a friend that'll take a guy off the street, take him into a clothing store, and buy him a whole outfit of clothes, shoes, coat, everything, depending on the season. And he does that because he's grateful for how the universe has blessed him. And he's a religious man, too. He's a Christian man, but he's putting those principles to work. And I think the reason I'm bringing this up is we can all be doing that. And mm-hmm. and just the act itself has a way of causing you to open your heart without you even thinking about it.
You know, when you're walking down the street, you can
walk on by. It sounds like Dionne Warwick.
You see him walking down the street. I love that song.
Go ahead. Anyway, go ahead. Sound like a song.
But you can feel the vibrations of these people. And if you're going to give something to someone, give someone who you can feel their vibration. Because that's when you're in the field. You're not giving it to try to do good or be good. You feel the person's energy. And when you feel their energy, you're automatically participating in the law of one. And you're giving to the thought in your mind should be, I'm giving to a part of myself that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're even, that's the, in fact, that's the only way that pure giving can take place. That when you see yourself giving to a part of yourself in someone else, which means you have to be tapped into empathy, your empathetic energy connection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the law of one. And how big can you make that? How much can you live that? How much can you live that experience that everyone around you is part of you? And sometimes people think that, well, I'm going to lose myself. How can I be just one big glob of everything? You know, the more people have that experience, the more individualistic they look to everyone. It's a dichotomy, but that experience makes you more of an individual, doesn't take your individuality away. If you look at people who are in public eye, that are very loving and vulnerable, some of them, they're doing that experience and they've gotten famous because they're able to do it. Because they've taken everyone. You know, I realized one of my issues in my life is that there were people that I couldn't create that experience with. And it blocked me. It's like I hated authority, so if someone was going to be my manager or this or that, I would resist it because I was like they were going to get control over me. But in fact, it's just parts of myself doing something that I couldn't do. And when you start to see it that way, you start to cooperate with all the energies around you, and life becomes a flow. You're flowing through the energies of oneness. And everyone around you is doing their part, and they're feeling good about doing their part because you're doing your part with them. Easier said than done, but that's the image.
Well, that's the role of a record producer, you know, in a recording session. You've been in the studio yourself. You know what I'm talking about, that you have an artist or a group of musicians that collectively make an artist, and... Your job is to sort of button up all the loose ends in what they're doing because they're emotionally involved in what they're doing, and not that the producer is not emotionally involved. He or she will sort of be a thermometer for or a barometer for what they're accomplishing, and it's important. If you're inclined to hear mistakes and flaws in the recording or in the performance, to bring out something of a higher quality, a better performance, more energy, more love, you know, all of those things are important elements to be within the music because it's a communication. You know, a recording is a way to communicate some message.
It's particularly true for a singer, you know.
Oh, yes.
A singer probably, you know, you can play an instrument and you get into your love and be a little anonymous, even if the vibes are not great. But a singer is totally naked in the studio. I mean, a good singer who has the potential to be a good singer, and whoever she's in there with her with is probably going to make a difference to her ability to do a good performance. Of course, the best singer will make everybody in the room be one with her, no matter who they are and where they came from. You know, she'll be a showstopper. But your music is one of those greatest things where the law of one manifests in a way that everyone can see it. Like, for example, when you have a bunch of musicians in front of an audience, and they are like opening up to each other empathetically, and they start getting psychic with each other, and you know their rhythms are so precisely one on top of the other. There's an energy that transmits to the audience automatically, and everyone is in fact the musician. Even though they're in the audience, they're also the musician because their energy is playing the musician. And the musician can go on and on and on and play much better because of the energy that's coming to him from the people in the audience. And he's creating a vibration of oneness in that mm-hmm. space. And I'm sure you do this, Don, so you know, I'm telling you
what
you do, right?
Yeah. Even when I'm teaching a music class, and I might be teaching a class in theory or composition or improvisation or recording, that really doesn't matter. Those are just different fragments of the whole process. But I will tell the class, and the first time I open my mouth in the class, I ask the question, first of all, what is music? And I get every kind of answer you can imagine, and eventually I get them to the place where they can communicate that it is a form of communication. And then some will call it an art form, and then I'll ask, well, what is art? And eventually, this comes from within them, you see. This isn't necessarily a thinking process. It's a moving of that energy to where I actually get them to open their heart and consider that it might be sharing something with someone else, which is a form of communication. And then when we get to that point, I ask them, okay, what are you communicating? Now, some will answer sound, and some will answer feeling, and some will say, well, a concept, but that's rather ambiguous. I mean, it's true, you can communicate a concept, but the musician, his or herself, is really communicating their thoughts and their feelings. And their feelings really are what they're communicating on many, many different levels, on a multi-dimensional scale.
Right. I was going to say, it's not just feelings, because feelings sounds like emotion. They're contributing their vibratory field. You know, one of the things that I...
Well, you didn't let me finish, but...
Go ahead.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say, is that, first of all, if you're making music with an instrument or you're singing, you're creating sound vibrations. Okay, you are making sounds, but the important thing is the nature of the vibration, and is it beneficial to the person, or is it something that's going to have a negative effect on them? That's something to consider when writing a song, when practicing the song, when performing the song, when recording the song, because you're going to put something out there when it's a recording that has the capacity to reach much larger numbers of people. You know, there aren't many places you can go and perform in front of a million people, and yet you can sell a million of your CD or your record, whatever it is, tapes, whatever medium it's on, you can sell a million copies and reach far more than a million people by doing that, because there will be more than a million people listening to it. You see, so the numbers can grow exponentially. Now, how important is it for you to be doing the things that are going to not just make it successful, but help you achieve the purpose? What is the meaning behind who you are and what you're doing? And what is your relationship to the audience? So, yes, that's true. That goes on quite a bit. Unfortunately, too, it goes on sometimes in the improper way. There's an ulterior motive in the mainstream record companies that is designed to keep consciousness in a certain place. So you have people doing these mosh pit things where they're picking people up and throwing them across the room, throwing them on the stage, or dropping them on the ground, or passing them from one person to another. It's an activity that reduces the art and the communication to a physical reality that really doesn't serve a purpose other than to let off some extra energy or something. It would be like listening to a certain style of music and having a riot break out. I mean, this used to happen with the Rolling Stones, and someone was murdered. So it's the quality of...
Were you at that concert? I was there.
No, I was not at that concert. Thank God I wasn't.
That was called Autobahns, remember?
Yeah.
And they were using the Hells Angels as bodyguards. And
yeah.
They had some altercation. Yeah, I was at that concert. I remember it.
No, I'm very familiar with it, and I saw the tapes of it and read about it, and I knew... Some people that were there, yes, but fortunately I wasn't there. Now, it might have been a nice experience up to a point, but that's the type of thing that I'm not trying to promote. I see no reason for listening to music and becoming violent. To me, I have no tolerance for violence, period. It's contrary to my nature, and I know it's really contrary to the intention of the Creator and how the universe was created. It wasn't created to be a place of violence. Yet there are many, many violent things that go on. And so, what am I getting at here? I guess we make the choice as to how we're going to participate in this thing, what our intention is going to be. And I think we should choose wisely, because we impact, as you said, the oneness of all of us. And we can do it in a positive way, or we can do it in a very destructive way.
Mm-hmm.
So we're about out of time, Wynn. Is there a...
I think we're going to go to one tonight.
You thought we were going to go to one?
where is Seth? Is Seth on overtime now?
Well, we're at the conclusion of our second hour.
Okay. is your show supposed to be 2 hours long?
Well, it's actually it's formally scheduled to be 1 hour, although I do have the graces of our wonderful founder, Don Newsom, to extend it a little bit if necessary. And this is a pretty important message that we're bringing forth tonight. You notice how we're moving through all these different vibrations?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's good, because you sound much more settled down than you did at the beginning.
But right now, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It's kind of like you have to get into a flow. And part of getting into the flow is starting out with the anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, it's very interesting. I used to perform a lot in front of audiences. And I wrote, you know, I'm a songwriter, and I had some of my songs were extremely sensitive, and I was very vulnerable in them, did I tell you the story about my job in Greenwood Lake, New York? I don't think I did. I got a job at a disco playing in between the top 40 bands, and the guy felt sorry for me, and he put me on for one night and was going to pay me $25. And I went up, and he said no one was going to listen to me, but he felt sorry for me, so he put me on. So I was looking at the audience, and sure enough, nobody was listening. It was into my second and third song. And so I said, I don't want to fail. I want to connect with these people. So I looked at everybody, and I let out this scream from the bottom of my guts. And everyone turned around and looked at me, and I said, that was a primal scream. And now you guys are going to do it. 1, 2, 3. And they all did it back to me. And so I really didn't know where I was going. I kind of just jumped in and said, where do I go from here? And somehow the rest of my set, I was just screaming and they were screaming. And the guy hired me for the entire summer to do that. And so what happened was I started to write some songs that would get attention at a disco in a bar. I mean, none of my songs worked. They were too sensitive. So I don't know. Did you listen to my music, Don? Did you hear the song Do It Till You're Sick of It?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was one that came out of that period, and that I made everyone sing, do it, do it, do it. And, of course, everyone loves singing Do It. You know, of course, you know what they're thinking about when they're saying Do It. And
yeah.
So I don't know if they understood the lyrics, but they... when I got to do it, they would all sing with me. So then I would learn that I had to use my very entertaining songs somewhat discretionarily, because I learned that I could win an audience really fast by doing Do It Till You're Sick of It, okay? But then it was really hard. They expected me to be really entertaining, and then I had to keep entertaining them. And it was different when we got into a slow burn. See, you and I get into a slow burn. It's like I'm not coming in, Don, I have this great message to tell everybody, let me tell you, blah, 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 right? We start off where we are, and maybe it's a little uncomfortable slightly at the beginning, but when we hit, we can talk for hours, okay?
Save that for AM radio. Okay.
Right. Exactly. So we get into creative conversations and we're relaxed, and you know, I'm not acting and trying to get people's attention. I'm just, you know, trying to find the flow where we share something, and it seems like we usually do. So I don't know why I brought that up, but in any case,
well, because you wanted to get one more story out before we sign off here.
Right.
Okay. Now you've been urging people to contact you, winfree@yahoo.com.
Well, let me just say, don't contact me unless...
Well, about your book.
Well, you know, if you're curious, if you want to read this, you know, there's an incredible story of my connection with the other side. And this voice that's talking to me that says they're the Council of Elohim, and they're incredibly wise, and it's a force that can send energy into this space and connect with you. And they say how to do it. They say how to connect with them. And a lot of people who have studied my material have changed their vibrations, have lifted their vibrations to another level. So I'm giving the book away for free. It's called, you know, just send an email, Elohim ebook, to winfree@yahoo.com. winfree@yahoo.com. And my other book is called The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and that's available on Amazon. It's available on my website. In fact, I really would appreciate it if you get it at my website, which is caseysback.com. And that book is changing people's lives. It's about the other group soul that works with mankind called the Ra group. And they probably, you know, as I said this, the Elohim never had bodies, the ones that we speak to. And so they're outside of this realm and can beam into it and kind of watch things like we're all in an aquarium, I guess. And the Ra group did have bodies, and then they graduated. And so there's billions of members of the Ra group that has huge wisdom. So the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce is an incredibly wise book from a source on the other side that understands the travesties of life very compassionately.
So, okay, now, if I don't close out this show, we are not going to have bodies.
Okay. All right, good.
All right, we've got to let Seth move on with the second half.
We should start closing out at 11, and then by 11:30 we'll be off the air.
Yeah. All right, well, it's been interesting, and we covered some new ground tonight. So hopefully we at least touched someone this evening. And I'm sure you're coming back again this month. I have you booked for another show in the near future. I don't have my schedule in front of me. And right now, I don't really feel like looking at it. So if you want to know when Wynn's coming back, go to directlightproductions.com, click on radio schedule, and then click on the first schedule that you see at the top of that index page. And a nice page will open, and it'll show you all the guests for the month of August, 2008. Wynn, thanks for being on the show. We got to say goodnight to the audience.
Thank you, Don, for having me on. Thank you, audience. And if anyone just wants to send me an email and say hello, I'm not so famous that I still don't enjoy getting emails from people saying they enjoyed the show. So it's winfree@yahoo.com, and I'll send you my next book or at it. Okay?
And give my best to Daphne and Terry also.
Thank you. Don't say the girls, okay?
Well, that's just a colloquial expression. Come on.
Listen, I get in trouble, okay? I mean, they don't like being referred to that way. It sounds like they're... Next time you can talk to Daphne and she'll blow her stack at you if you say that. So in any case...
Well, I welcome the challenge.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Wynn. You have a good rest of the week, and we'll talk soon. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest tonight, Win Free. We'll be back later on this month. Special thanks to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and to Seth Hendrick on the sound. And thank you for the listening audience for being there. I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.